Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, July 22nd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabwean business mogul Strive Masiyiwa rubs shoulders with Obama at a development summit in Washington.
How do you introduce the President of the United States? They said to me I had 3 minutes. I said, in Africa, I can't say my name in 3 minutes. It's a great honor and privilege to introduce President Obama.
Zimbabweans speak out on war veterans' move to dump President Robert Mugabe.
I was surprised that they could make this declaration, but I think it was coming because the war veterans are sort of being put in a corner.
And an international AIDS conference ends in South Africa with a lot of optimism in the fight against the virus. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Zimbabwean business mogul Strive Masiyiwa introduced President Robert Mugabe, President Obama, 2 days ago at a development summit in Washington, D.C., designed to improve the lives of people in the world. The event was the White House Summit on Global Development, which brought together top global experts to talk about the progress that President Obama and his administration have made in energy, food security, global health, good governance, development partnerships, and youth initiatives around the world. Masiyiwa had this to say when he introduced the United States president to the people that were attending the summit.
How do you introduce the president of the United States? They said to me, I had 3 minutes. I said, in Africa, I can't say my name in 3 minutes. It's a great honor and privilege to introduce President Obama. It is almost 10 years to the day when I first met then-Senator Obama over lunch in Johannesburg, South Africa, on one of his many visits to Africa. He had sought me out because he knew that I was part of a small group of African and global leaders that had been assembled by outgoing UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to find solutions for nutrition and food security. During the lunch, I quickly realized how immersed he was in the key issues affecting global development, in particular in Africa. He did not need me to tell him that women smallholder farmers are the backbone of agriculture in the developing world, or that parts of Africa and India, close to 40% of the children are stunted because of poor nutrition, or that over 1 billion people have no access to electricity. It was clear then that Senator Obama had a global vision for how we tackle poverty, promote inclusive growth, and safeguard the sustainability of our planet. He understood it required bold leadership and unprecedented cooperation on the part of governments, donors, philanthropists, civil society, and the private sector. President Obama's presidency has been a testament to this vision. Even as the global financial crisis into which he was elected raged, he put global development at the center from the very beginning, and he stayed the course, as many of you know. He has championed major initiatives such as Power Africa to bring electricity and economic growth to sub-Saharan Africa, Feed the Future to dramatically improve food security and nutrition, the Young African Leadership Initiative, which has gone into our lexicon now in Africa as YALI, to nurture the next generation of leaders, the Global Entrepreneurship Summit to pivot our focus to entrepreneurship and job creation, and more, much more. In short, President Obama has rolled out the most audacious agenda on global development of any administration in history. I know there are 1 billion Africans who look forward to the next phase of his deep relationship with our continent. Thank you. Please join me in welcoming the man of many legacies, the 44th President of the United States of America, President Barack Obama.
That was Zimbabwean business mogul Strive Masiyiwa of Econet Wireless speaking at a White House Development Summit in Washington, D.C. In his response, Mr. Obama praised Masiyiwa for fighting hard to end poverty in the world.
Well, thank you, Strive, for those kind words and your great work to promote opportunity in Africa and across the globe. I should point out, by the way, Strive just told me he was in the middle of a board meeting. He flew here. He's got to go back. He hasn't gotten any sleep. That's how committed he is to the work that we're doing. So give Strive a big round of applause. So this is quite a group. Just a lot of do-gooders in one room. And sometimes when I'm talking to young interns at the White House who are still immunizing themselves from the cynicism that's so chronic in this town, I remind them, if you had to choose a moment in history to be born and you didn't know ahead of time who you were going to be, you'd choose now. Because the world has never been less violent, healthier, better educated, more tolerant, with more opportunity for more people and more connected than it is today. And all of you can take great pride in these historic achievements. It's a testament to what's possible when we work together. Governments, multilateral institutions, the private sector, and civil society. And it is a testament to our shared commitment to the dignity of every human being. This is something I was nursed on. Some of you know my mother worked with USAID and the Ford Foundation, traveling places like Indonesia and Pakistan, working to help lift up the rural poor, particularly women. It's something that I tried to apply myself as a young grassroots organizer on the south side of Chicago, working with people who wanted to expand hopes and opportunity and jobs in forgotten neighborhoods. I've seen the possibilities of progress, and so have all of you. And yet, we are humbled by the work that remains. When some 800 million men, women, and children subsist on less than $1.25 a day, when 11 boys and girls are dying every minute from mostly preventable causes, when hundreds of women are dying every day from having a baby, when all this is happening right before our eyes, we know we've got a lot of work to do.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama speaking at a White House Development Summit in Washington, D.C. Some Zimbabweans have expressed shock and disbelief, with others welcoming a declaration by the National Liberation War Veterans Association yesterday that President Robert Mugabe is now a national liability and should resign over misgovernance and failing to revitalize the economy and deal with corruption that has devastated the Southern African nation. Patricia Mudadigwa reports from Harare.
Over the years, war veterans have been loyal to President Mugabe, but they decided to dump him yesterday following the recalling of their leader Chris Muchangwa from parliament, expulsion from ZANU-PF for undermining the authority of the president. In a communique released after the meeting in Harare, the war veterans claimed that, I quote, "they note with concern, shock and dismay the systematic entrenchment of dictatorial tendencies personified by the president and his cohorts, which have slowly devoured the values of the liberation struggle in utter disregard of the constitution," end quote. Reacting to the former freedom fighters' move to dump Mr. Mugabe and abandon him ahead of the 2018 presidential elections, Harare resident Love Mokadenge said, He was stunned by the brazen stance taken by the war veterans at yesterday's meeting.
I was surprised that they would make this declaration, but I think it was coming because the war veterans are sort of being put in a corner, especially when their leader, Chris Mchangwa, and the previous ones, Jabulani Sibanda and the other guys, the trend has been the same, that they are removed from ZANU-PF when they don't toe the line.
Another resident, Albert Chidakwa, concurred, adding that it was embarrassing that the president's close colleagues no longer have faith in him.
The war veterans have come to the full realization that that Mugabe has overstayed his welcome. And I think for Mugabe to be told by his close subordinates that he should step down, I think it's so embarrassing to him. Why do I say so? It's because that Mugabe has long relied on the war veterans as his pillar of strength.
Chidakwa, however, said it was highly unlikely that he would hit the war veterans' call to step down.
What I see and how I know Mugabe has never listened to anyone.
Alfred Zurutwe, a political activist, said he was excited that finally the war veterans have realized that the president is a national liability.
What the war vets have done, it has finally shown that they're now seeing the light. We've been trying all along to enlighten them that things are not going the way they are supposed to be, and what they went to war to fight for is now the other way around. Only a few are now enjoying their hard times that they faced in the bush.
A political analyst, Kudakwa Shetsiga, said while he applauded the war veterans for speaking with the same voice with the masses, it was unfortunate that they are doing so when they have assisted in allegedly destroying Zimbabwe.
The war veterans themselves were the beneficiaries of the state patronage system, and they've been behind the collapse of the economy over the years. And
the clash between the war veterans and President Mugabe appeared to have been resolved when the Zimbabwean leader met with the former freedom fighters sometime this year and resolved to work together to tackle various issues. However, the war veterans, who once received lump sums of 50,000 each in the 1990s after complaining bitterly of being neglected by Mr. Mugabe's government, say the president has not fulfilled all the promises made at that meeting. ZANU-PF is currently gripped by factionalism, pitting two camps that are fighting for the succession of the 92-year-old President Mugabe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
Thanks, Patricia. Meanwhile, Mandi Chimene, who claims to be the new leader of the war veterans, said the former freedom fighters' move is baseless as they were no longer members of the organization. She claimed that Mutswangwa and his group were expelled from the War Veterans Association for undermining the authority of the president. However, the war veterans insist they are in charge and want Mr. Mugabe to go. The 21st edition of the International AIDS Conference came to an end in Durban today with the issue of money required for funding efforts to stem the virus dominating the conference. As the curtain rolled down on the AIDS conference, organizers challenged the delegates to go back to their countries and start the hard work towards the eradication of the pandemic by 2030. For a wrap-up of the events at the Durban International Convention Centre, we reached HIV/AIDS activist Martha Tolana, who was awarded the Elizabeth Taylor Humanitarian Award.
The things that people need to be concentrating and working on, that we need to make sure that children are not left behind, but in fact no one is left behind, but particularly looking at children, adolescents, young people, and also looking at in making sure that medicines are available, that the human rights of people living with HIV are protected, and that we do not forget prevention and make sure that everyone is not left behind in the prevention strategy.
There was also a discussion, so we understand, on the possibility of coming up with an AIDS vaccination. What is the situation regarding that?
AIDS vaccine trials started recently, and it was going to look at the ethics and looking at when they are looking at ethics and also research literacy that people need to know, so that communities really are aware of when they become participants, and if they are not participants, they are able to support those who are participating in the trials, and also giving correct information, and that we should not forget prevention, but also looking at treatment issues, looking at all the optimal treatment issues.
That was HIV/AIDS activist Martha Tolana. She spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Durban, South Africa. Coming up, a woman living with disabilities in Zimbabwe gets help following an appeal for assistance on Studio 7. But first, a look at regional and international news. Whistleblower and former U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden says he's working on a mobile phone case that would prevent users from being spied on. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, the blunt political outsider who defied the odds and defeated a large field of experienced politicians in this year's U.S. primaries, formally accepted his party's presidential nomination yesterday. Trump promised to bring sweeping political change, to create wealth, and to make America safe again in a speech that excited delegates on the fourth and final day of their national convention in Cleveland. It was Donald Trump's biggest political moment in the spotlight so far, and Trump was eager to seize it. With his family looking on and thousands of excited Republicans in the convention hall, Trump sought to foster party unity after a sometimes fractious convention. Trump is now set to clash with presumptive nominee Hillary Clinton of the Democratic Party in the November presidential election. For more details on Trump's nomination as the Republican candidate, Studio 7 Chuoniso Gianni reached VOA's Joao Santarita.
But I must say that last night was perhaps one of the few nights in this convention where there was no controversy as such, apart from what you can, what you might take from the speech. And so, but this is the night in which he accepted his nomination. That's how he opened the speech, and then he proceeded to make a speech giving his vision about the situation in America and what are his plans for the future.
Did Donald Trump say anything new in his speech last night to reaffirm his candidacy, especially in light of what Ted Cruz did on Tuesday night?
You know, you must remember that the whole primary campaign of Donald Trump was marked by many controversies by his statement. This was a more, let's say, presidential statement. It was a very long speech. I must say it was also a very pessimistic speech about the situation in America and in the world. But it was, in a sense, you could see that it was a well-crafted speech in which he conveyed his opinion that the situation in the world has deteriorated, and also in America. And of course, he blamed this on the current administration of Barack Obama, and as far as foreign policy is concerned, on Secretary Clinton, who was Secretary of State in the first Barack Obama mandate. I must say that as far as foreign policy is concerned, Donald Trump talked about a more isolationist policy. He talked about policy of America first and then globalization, and made it clear that he wants a policy where the interests of America will be put first, and then only then can you talk about multilateralism.
That was VOA's Joao Santarita of the Portuguese service on the line with Studio 7's Joaniso Gianni from Cleveland, Ohio.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Prominent independent social researcher and political commentator Khaim Lai was shot and killed in Phnom Penh on Sunday, July 10th. Let me share my condolences for the dead. I condemn this brutal act, Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a Facebook post later that day. He also called on authorities to take strong action in the case and try to control and strengthen security in order to protect the safety of people across the country. In a Facebook post, Sam Rangsi, the president of the opposition Cambodian National Rescue Party, strongly condemned the killing. Mr. Khaim Lai was a dignified son of Cambodia who actively participated in the fight for democracy and justice for the Khmer people, he wrote. I never thought that I was going to live long, Mr. Lai reportedly said. One day I might die or be shot to death, but as long as I live, I will say what others dare not to. No one can buy me or make me not speak out. We are deeply saddened and concerned by reports of the tragic killing of prominent Cambodian political commentator Dr. Khaim Lai, said John Kirby, Assistant Secretary and State Department spokesperson, in a statement. We offer our sincere and profound condolences to his family, friends, and colleagues. The United States, he said, is following developments in this case closely, noting the Cambodian government's call for an investigation, and urged that authorities ensure this process be thorough and impartial.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A Zimbabwean family based in New York here in the USA recently donated blankets, clothes, groceries and money for transport to Anna Lungisani, a blind Epworth woman living with HIV whose plight for help was aired here on Studio 7. A Studio 7 reporter, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye, also donated some items to Lungisani. Our correspondent Safari Njema witnessed the handing over of the goods and some money to Lungisani and filed this report.
Lungisani's family says it is grateful for the love shown by Veronica and Bernard Domingo, a Zimbabwean couple living in New York. Anna says she can now keep warm this winter with food to eat.
I'm happy because I was suffering very much, even during the night. I spent the whole night thinking because I was lonely, especially these days, it is too cold. They helped me. They show that they have so much love with others. So I want to thank them, Mr. Domingo and your wife, Miss Marvelous. May God, the Lord, bless you all.
Her 12-year-old sister, Rachel, who handles all household chores, says the donation has given her sibling hope that one day she'll be strong enough to take care of herself.
I feel happy because now my sister can have clothes, she can have things to eat, and we can wash her clothes with things that you give us, like soap, safi, and she can eat whether I'm not here. If my sister can see, she can help me to wash plates, help me to sweep in the house when I'm in school. And I need her, if she can walk, to help me if she can do anything is needed at home.
Lungisani, a widow, went blind at the age of 29 soon after the death of her husband. She has been struggling to survive. 22-year-old Christopher Chakuchichi, who stays in the neighborhood, said people should always respond to calls of those in need.
I think this is a good initiative as it sets a very good example in the society. And not only does it set a good example, but then it also encourages others to come forward and help this person in need. It gives the person who has been helped the peace of mind so that they won't be stressed.
Tinotenda Piri from Bankett, who uses a wheelchair and teaches at Rafingora High School, says it is important for Zimbabweans and other nationals to donate to people like Anna because such help changes their lives. Piri says people with disabilities should also be seen to be donating to others in Anna's situations.
We have to understand that when something happens to somebody, they need their community, they need their fellow countrymen to do something, because you never know, one day you might also be in such a situation as this lady, and you might actually need to be helped by your fellow Zimbabweans.
Retired member of the Natural Resources Board, Victor Muunganirwa, says the Department of Social Welfare should work together with the private sector and other stakeholders to raise funds for the Social Welfare Fund. He was responding to comments by an official from the Department of Social Welfare, who declined to be named, that they were now concentrating on assisting people in rural areas due to shortages of funds.
In short, this means we will have failed. In a way, we were supposed to have assisted these people. The real thing is a lot of us look for assistance from the government. A lot of people will be looking forward to see the government assisting if these people are identified in their communities or areas. As it is now, as we are discussing it as a subject, this is very, very difficult, as it is being said by the government that they don't have enough to assist these people.
His views are supported by Senator Nyamayavo Mashavakure, who represents people with disabilities in parliament, who says the number of people requiring assistance is continuing to grow.
They have developed a program called Harmonized Social Cash Transfer, which is supposed to give about, I think, $20 a month to whichever family will have been chosen or whichever family will be affected. And, of course, that amount, again, is not too much, $20. Even if you're in a rural area, a bucket of maize probably now in this drought situation could cost anything from $10 upwards. It means that if you want to go and collect that money, you need some transport and then possibly change that. You can come and use to buy something for yourself, mealie meal or maize or whatever. So the amount is not much.
Veronica and Bernard Domingo told Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Uye, who facilitated the donation and also sourced some of the goods, that they shed tears after listening to a report which chronicled how Anna Lungisani was failing to access treatment due to lack of money and her deteriorating health. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, I am Safari Njema.
And in sports news, it's a do or die for the Sables of Zimbabwe as the Zimbabwe National Army Charity Shield reaches its climax. Michael Kariati gives us the story.
Defeat for the Zimbabweans will lead to relegation from the Africa Cup Division 1A and from the qualifiers for the 2019 World Cup Finals for the first time since 1980. The Zimbabweans made things difficult for themselves after they lost 61-15 to Kenya in their opening game at Harare Sports Club. Should they win against Uganda, they will overtake the Cranes into third position ahead of their final game against defending champions Namibia on August 6. Coach Cyprian Mandenge is brimming with confidence, saying the players are aware of the stakes on offer and preparations have been intense. Mandenge, however, should be warned that he is in danger of becoming the first Sables coach in 36 years to fail to take the Sables to the World Cup qualifiers. At the same time, the curtain comes down on the Zimbabwe National Army Charities Shield, with Highlanders and Harare City battling for the $12,000 on offer for the winners at Baba Field Stadium Sunday. Harare City coach Moses Chunga says he's not reading much into Highlanders' current standing on the league table, saying they have devised a strategy that will see Boso fall. Although Highlanders are top of the table, while Harare City are in 8th position, Bambo says that is nothing to talk about, as this is a cup final and his players have been in cup finals before. However, football analyst Shepherd Mchapera says Chunga talks too much with little results on the field of play and should prove that Sunday.
Yeah, Moses Chunga, to me, is very talkative.
Although the man on offer, 12,000 for the winners and 8,000 for the losers, is little, in Zimbabwe, it is better to have that little than nothing at all. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thanks, Michael. And on Studio 7 Live Talk tonight, we'll be talking about war veterans' move to dump President Robert Mugabe, claiming that he's a dictator. And now to recap today's top stories. Zimbabwean business mogul Strive Masiwa rubs shoulders with Obama at a development summit in Washington. Zimbabweans speak out on war veterans' move to dump President Mugabe. And an international AIDS conference ends in South Africa with a lot of optimism in the fight against the virus. That's our broadcast this evening. now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungang Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night.